Great, so welcome to our podcast where we're focusing on research. I'm Professor Brendan McCormack and I'm the Executive Member for Research for the Council of Deans. Today I'm in conversation with Professor Hugh McKenna, who is Chair of the REF Unit of Assessment Panel 3 in the 2021 panel. And we're here at the Council's first Research Strategy Conference, which has got a wide and diverse array of speakers focusing on research excellence, research capacity building, and health research in an interdisciplinary and global context. So Hugh, it's great to have you here with us. I wondered if we could kick off by you giving us some context in relation to where we are currently at with the REF at this point in time.
Okay, we are in the last lap, so to speak. The submission date is the 27th of November, which is not that far away considering summer's going to intervene. At the moment, we have got to the stage where we're going to be looking for new extra panel members. You may recall that back in 2014, at the start of the process, all of the panel members came together at the start. You know, it was up to 52 for subpanel 3. They were there from day one. This time around, in terms of outputs, impact, case studies and environmental statements, and we're not going to have enough people on the panel. So as of yesterday, we are going out to recruit an extra number of people across nursing, allied health profession, dentistry and pharmacy. And that will open tomorrow. Thursday, and that will then close in April, and at that stage I will have probably another, well, at the moment of 28 people in the panel, so do the maths. If I want the same as the last time, you know, I'm going for quite a number. I'm going to look for about 8 to 9 impact assessors, and they are people from outside the university sector who are working in the health services, managers or working in industry or wherever. Professional bodies is another example where we will have impact assessors. So that's where we are at the moment. We are also putting together the IT system to make sure that universities can submit on time and in the right manner, but also that the panel can assess in a confidential way. So we're getting all sorts of encrypted pen drives where we're going to have all of the various outputs on. And it's we will be looking at quite a number of outputs. You know, probably each panel member could have 500 outputs to look at.
Wow.
Because every output is assessed at least twice. And they did it the last time and did it very well, and I've no doubt they'll do it very well this time. So that's where we are.
Great. And so a huge amount of work lying ahead at this point in time. Just to pick up on in a sense, your vision around the Unit of Assessment 3 for REF 2021, because at our Council of Deans annual conference last year, you gave a great presentation where you set out really quite clearly a whole set of issues, really, that
did I?
No, I was there. I heard them. That you actually saw as a vision for how we could, you know, really demonstrate our effectiveness, really, as researchers. So it included some things around, you know, knowing the rules of the game and knowing how to play it well. About, you know, ensuring we were clear about what significant responsibility for research meant and how we worked that one. About how to increase the number of people who would be returned, so we could show that impact. You also talked about interdisciplinarity, which is clear in this REF to be a really important part of it, and about how we generally improve performance. I wondered, given all of that and given that vision, what you think HEI should be doing now and in the next months. I mean, we were thinking next year, but actually, as you say, it's not that far away, really, to really achieve those things, or do you think we're too late?
No, I think there's a lot we can do, and I'm going to touch on some of this tomorrow. It's too late to tell people how many outputs they need and how to produce a 3-star, 4-star input, output. And people who listen to this podcast will know that you don't get anything for 1-2-star unclassified. It has to be 3-star, 4-star, and that has all implications among in HR terms across the sector. So it's too late to talk about those things, but a lot of this is going to be focused on what you can do for impact. Impact case studies are really, really important. You've heard me say before that for a 4-star impact case study. It's probably worth somewhere between 6 and 8 4-star papers, and you know how long it takes to get a 4-star paper out. So I was amazed at how poorly some of the impact case studies were written the last time, were drafted, in other words. Some people brought in journalists to make them readable. To be honest, that backfired on some universities because it dumbed down the science. And how I'm going to do it is I'm going to have 2 academic members of the panel and a research user for every case study. So it's a 2-stage process. The research underpinning the impact must be at least 2-star. So that's the role of the 2 academics to make that decision. Once they make that decision, and if it's positive, then the research user will look to the impact case study. Some of the impact case studies were written in complicated jargon that were unreadable, even for somebody who works in the field. And that can still be addressed between now and the 27th of November. Some of them were written, as I said already, in journalistic simplicity, and that can be addressed. Also, it's very clear where if you've got funding for your research, you should say it within the impact case study. It's amazing how many people didn't do that. Mm. And it's amazing how many people didn't really interrogate the research they were putting forward to underpin this case study. So there's a lot of work to be done there. Also, in the environment this time, we're going to have an environmental statement from the university. And that's going to be appended to the environmental statement from the unit assessment. So we're going to read that one first. And so there's an opportunity to get both gelling together. There's an opportunity to be able to, in the environment, it's only worth 15%, but well, that's a lot. Every point is precious, but it's not too late. In fact, I say a lot of people haven't even went into the penultimate draft of their environment statement this time. So tomorrow I'm going to go into greater detail about how that would look. Outputs and getting enough people back. Again, the decision has probably been made by a lot of universities already, but remember that you don't need up to 4 papers that are 3 and 4-star. You can be returned this ref with 1 paper. In fact, depending on your personal circumstances, you can be returned with no papers. And we will see some of them. So those people in nursing and allied health professions around the sector who are saying, well, I don't have 4 papers or I don't have 5 papers, they don't have to. So I would expect to see more. And I can't go into numbers because it hasn't been released yet. But as of yesterday, I can tell you this way, that compared to 2014, we've had a significant increase in the number of people who've been returned to in terms of the intention to submit, and we've got a significant increase in the number of case studies coming our way, and we've got a really big increase in the number of outputs coming our way.
And what do you think is causing that increase?
It's universities having to return everybody who has a significant responsibility for research. And I think the people listening to this podcast would know that in the past, some people would tap on the shoulder and say, you've got X number of high quality papers, you're going to be returned, but you won't be returned because we don't like your papers or we don't. And some interdisciplinary research, which you just touched on, Brendan, some of that, when it did come forward, was really high quality and was treated very well. But a lot of universities were reluctant to put it in. So I know there's been interdisciplinary research. I know there's been really good, strong qualitative research and theoretical research coming from nursing and allied health profession that was not returned.
Yeah.
We did a calibration exercise for the last ref, and we'll be doing one in December 2020. And I took papers from outside the UK for that calibration exercise. And I made sure I had a theoretical paper, I had a qualitative paper, I had a mixed methods paper, I had a quantitative paper, RCT, I had a Cochrane review. So there was about 24 papers spread across, and they were varied from 0 unclassified to 4-star. So we got all of the panel members in a room, and we got them to discuss. Before that, they had received the papers online, and they'd put on what their score was. And that theoretical paper got 4-star, and the qualitative papers got 3 and 4-star without it. But it's amazing when you talk to vice chancellors, when you talk to research directors and PVCs, that they are so reluctant to put those papers forward.
Yeah.
So I would encourage, we will look at everything apart from theses and abstracts. Everything else is fair game, including patents. So please you know, encourage your managers to not hold on to qualitative papers, theoretical papers, philosophical papers, believing that they will not get well through it. That has not been the case to date.
But that's really interesting. I mean, it's really interesting anyway, but it's really interesting in the context of interdisciplinarity. So do you think that focus on interdisciplinarity is going to really help to see more of this research being recognized as proper science and making a contribution? Or what else do you think the interdisciplinarity thing is going to kind of work for us in some way?
We've been really serious about this in the RIF panel. So I've identified three members of the panel whose job it is to focus on interdisciplinary. Angus Wallace from Edinburgh, and Kitty Aparu from Ulster, and Sally, just forgotten her name, from Oxford. Okay. And their job is to encourage interdisciplinary assessment across the panel members. And all the panel members, by definition, they wouldn't be there if they didn't have experience in disciplinary. We also are expecting to see interdisciplinary sections within the environment. You know, how does your university encourage interdisciplinary research? Is it about space? Is it about, you know, having research space where people come together? Is it about incentives in terms of you'll give PhD studentships to people who are coming from different disciplines as you're revising? We also, at the main panel, we have people on the main panel whose entire role has been interdisciplinary research, and they're there almost as interdisciplinary police to say, hold on, don't forget about interdisciplinary research. So I think it's going to give a boost to interdisciplinary research. And if you look what's happening in number 10 with Dominic Cummins and with the Prime Minister, they want to see more interdisciplinary research because, as I said earlier on, that's the research that will solve the big global problems. You look at older people, you look at mental health issues, you look at climate change. That's not going to be solved by one scientist in their lonely lab or one social scientist in their lonely writer's garret. It's going to be solved by people working together. So I think this will be a watershed for disciplinary research. The message is coming loud and clear that it's important.
Brilliant. And so lastly, I guess kind of thinking ahead of REF and or this round of REF, maybe you'll be doing REF 2026.
I'm nominating Brendan McCormick to chair that one.
We'll see about that one. Wondering what your kind of longer term advice for the NMAP community, research community, would be on kind of building institutions research strategy, where we go based on now what you've done, 3 RAE and 2 REF, is that right?
3 RAE and
2
REF. And Kadir, in his presentation today, what some of your listeners will not have seen, showed clearly how allied health professions and nursing research has increased in its research excellence and also its quota and quantity over 1986 to 2014. And I believe that would be the same in 2021. But there still needs to be a raising of consciousness out there about people getting out of their silos and working across. Why are occupational therapists or community nurses not working with engineers? Maybe they are. Or computer scientists. We need to do more of that because of the interdisciplinary issue that I mentioned. I also think that we're not playing the research funding game well enough. It's amazing how people have said, well, I put in a bid and I got a really bad response, you know, and it just knocked my confidence. I'll never put another bid in ever again. And you get over it. That's, you know, not everybody is able to have that kind of hit for research funding. And sometimes interdisciplinary research will be funded better than unidisciplinary research because it will give you access to other funding pots. I also believe that we need to encourage the next generation of nurse leaders and allied health profession leaders. I'm reasonably au fait with the UK sector, but if I went into a classroom tomorrow and I was talking to third year students and I asked them to name the top 10 leaders in their profession, I suspect I'd have a major difficulty with them giving me any more than 2 or 3 names, if that. So we need to encourage greater leadership potential among our staff. We need to then get get the balance between teaching and research. We don't see any pedagogic research coming forward. We've got people on the panel who've now been developed, trained to assess educational research, pedagogic research from allied health professionals in nursing, and we're seeing next to nothing on it.
Yeah.
So does that tell me that they're not publishing in nurse education today, or they're not publishing in some of the other educations? Of course they are. Why are we not seeing it? Is it being stopped at some middle level, frozen middle of a university that we're not seeing, or is it being not just putting it forward? So we need to have that research teaching nexus sorted out in the next ref in 2028, and we also need to raise the consciousness of some people, and we need to get more allied health professionals and nurses into positions of leadership in universities. It's great now that we've got five vice chancellors,
yep,
that are correct me if it's more than that, five vice chancellors that are nurses by background, and you've got some allied health professions, so Steve West, for example, podiatrist in west of England, Bristol, and there are others, and there are others sitting and waiting at pro vice chancellor level ready to step up. We need to do whatever we can to encourage that. Because there are some people, and your listeners would probably know some of them, who would say, they have colleagues who would say they're amazed that nurses and allied health professions can walk upright, let alone do research. And we have to show them that we do excellent science and high quality outputs, impact and research environment. And we're getting there, but there's more work to be done.
So finally.
I thought that was final.
No, sorry. This is a final, which is, given that this is our first strategic research conference, and I know you've said in your presentation we should make it annual, which we'd be keen to do, but what would be your inspirational message for us in terms of going forward and grasping the agenda?
That's a really good question, Bren, and it's tied up with some of the things I've already said. I was here to start with Tony Butterworth in the Council of Deans, where we met in various places around London, and people thought we were mad, and it has developed exponentially over the years, and it's become very powerful. It's become a voice for policy, for politicians and for the health service and for universities, and just continue to do that, grow that potential, grow that influence, stay close to the thought leaders and make sure that you are encouraging and influencing them, and be the voice for nursing and allied health professions right across the UK. I probably think you can do more internationally. You know, I was in Sydney recently, and next week I'm in Atlanta, and I know that if you mention the Council of Deans there, they say, who?
Yeah.
And you're really doing really good work that other countries can learn from. So that's what I would recommend.
Brilliant. Well, Hugh, thank you very much for giving your time, and a pleasure to talk to you as always.
And you too, Bren. And Dorothea is sitting here in the wings. And so thank you, Dorothea.